there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your hair. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wink Podcast, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. Today, folks, hold your applause to the end. Today, we have back with us the national treasure and the regional gem. That's right, the national treasure, Tom Carp Carpenter, the editor of the Pheasants Forever Journal, the regional gem, Ryan Sparky Sparks.
What region am I a gem from?
The editor of the Quail Forever Journal. Yeah. I think you're the Great Plains gem.
I'll take that. Right? Yeah. Midwest, yeah.
And we're going to recap the hunting season that was for 2024 and preview the spring editions of the Pheasants Forever Journal and the Quail Forever Journal that are getting put finishing touches on right now. Fellas, thank you for joining me for another episode.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Wintry day, talk about fun stuff, looking back at the season and looking forward to what's coming this spring.
You guys have been on quite a few podcasts at this point. Any feedback that you've heard from listeners? And I'll start us off about you know, the episodes you guys have been, I've gotten a tremendous amount of feedback for the book review, Upland Book Club podcast.
And the Battleship one. I've heard quite a bit about the Battleship one, too. People like that concept. It's fun.
Which we are going to do at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic on the Quail stage.
That's right.
And Ryan Callahan is, Cal from Meat Eater, mm-hmm. is moderating Quail Battleship.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
So I've gotten a lot of feedback on the Upland Book Club. So we gotta think about a part two there if there's more books.
I got a whole stack on my nightstand right now. Because
I was wondering if we should get different people in their list of books or if you guys had additional, because we only dug into the top five. So we could come back with another episode and talk Upland books. You got more in your library, Carp?
Oh, yeah. I think Brian probably has more than I do. But there's other slices, too. You know, we can look at Upland literature, you know, those types.
We did last time.
Well, but we sort of...
I know. I'm teasing because you went more how-to.
Right.
And I got a copy just last week of Hunting the Long-Tailed Bird. So that's on my to-read list right now on my nightstand.
And I still have to read the one you gave me about the pheasant story from England.
The quirky one.
Yeah, the novel.
Maryland bought that.
Yeah, but, so there was another book that was self-published by some guy that's just off the wall. She was like, I got a couple chapters into this, and where are the pheasants?
That's right.
Completely different book. It was called Bird Brain.
Yeah.
That's the name.
It wasn't quite the same book.
No.
So back to the original question, like what's the feedback? Do people call you National Treasure regularly now, Carl?
Some do. Some have picked it up. It's been long enough now. I think one listener once coined that.
Yeah.
When I did a lot of carpisms in one particular episode. I get a lot of feedback. They like the down home style that maybe Ryan and I sort of bring to this podcast. We're scientists at heart, but hunters as well, and conservationists, and it all sort of comes out. And I think people just like the straightforward, no BS honesty.
Are you saying I bring the BS?
Yeah, you are BS.
I guess so. What about you, Carp or Sparks?
Yeah, good feedback. Good feedback. I've kind of found that the ones we do that I have the most fun are the ones that you hear the most about. So like the Battleship one, the book club one. If anybody's looking for a good book to get excited for turkey season, I am halfway through Illumination in the Flatwoods. And it's a great book about this guy who got a turkey brood to imprint on him, and then he is raising them in the wilds of Florida.
Oh, wow.
Who wrote that? Like who is the author from that?
Joe Hutto, maybe? Okay. Hutto, I believe. Hmm. Anyway, it's good. He's got another book where he goes and lives with mule deer. It's kind of his thing. He goes and lives with some critter and then writes about it.
If you like turkey reading, too, another guy to read is Colonel Tom Kelly.
Oh, yeah. He's got the 10th Legion, baby.
Yeah, he's got about a series of five. And he's a real down-home southerner, and he's a forester. And it's some pretty good reading. Hmm. So,
yeah.
Well, let's do a turkey podcast sometime.
Yeah, we're not going to go into
turkeys. Let's hear your owl hoot.
Who cooks for you? Hey,
that's
Who cooks
right.
for you all?
That's right.
All right, what we are going to do is recap each of your hunting seasons. Well, I'm curious to hear about the highlights, the lowlights, the hits and the misses, as well as preview the spring editions of the Pheasants Forever Journal and the Quail Forever Journal. Before we get rolling, as I mentioned, Purina Pro Plan is the presenting partner of On the Wing podcast, and they're also the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. All three of my pups, Esky, Gitchy, and Winter, all eat Purina Pro Plan, and it's not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat conservation mission of our organization, which is absolutely critically important to me, but it's also because Purina Pro Plan is a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Learn more at ProPlansport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. All right. So we'll start with carp. We a year ago right now, we were looking out the window to February in Minnesota with no snow, and we were all electric with the anticipation about the adult carryover of birds. And then spring came, and the rains came at the worst possible time. And, you know, we've talked a lot about it on forecasts and all sorts of different episodes about what that spring weather and, you know, the lack of enough habitat to mitigate the wet spring during nesting season. So we've talked about all of that ad nauseum. But what we haven't talked about is putting a bow on the hunting season that was and what you found out on the landscape. And I know your season started with sharp tails in North Dakota and progressed to bobwhite quail in Iowa, I believe.
No bobs in Iowa.
No
this
bobs
year,
this year.
Yeah,
okay.
Started with sharp tails in North Dakota, three sojourns up there. But then, right into pheasant season, and we can talk about sharp tails too, something I could talk about all day.
Yeah, you could talk sharpies.
But so I'll just start there. I mean, it was interesting up hunting sharp tails. I think it was the pheasant season turned out good, but to start out with sharp tails, it was funny, you know, in the Dakotas, the Great Plains did get decent rains early on, and it was what I call sort of the Goldilocks syndrome. And usually, as a sharp tail hunter, you're up there looking for enough grass. And this year you were looking for less grass because it was so good and is either too tall or too thick. And you spent a lot of time looking for a little less grass, where usually you're looking for a little more. But it was a nice sharp tail season, and I heard a lot of good reports from
nice
across.
As in, do you think it, how does it stack up to the year prior?
As far as hunting success, I'd say the same, at
really?
Least
okay.
the same.
Oh.
Yeah. At least for me and the places I hunted, it was good. Like I say, though, you'd get to some places, you're like, there ain't going to be any sharp tails here. It looks pheasanty.
Yeah.
And you had to sort of get to the thinner spots. But it was good. You know, sharp tails are a bird of miles, steps and miles. And if you put on enough of both, you're going to find them, you know. And I think like pheasants, I think they may have had some renesting. And that sort of guides us into pheasant season is, you know, we all had a little worry going into the season. And I think it was fairly standard across the pheasant range, that that first nesting attempts were unsuccessful in many, it's all regional and situational on both big and small scales. But I think that, you know, it dried out later in summer, and I think there were a lot of good second attempt broods out there. And a lot of, I still got one bird in December in Iowa that was maybe only three quarters colored yet. And that was in December. But the pheasant season, it was funny. I started out in Minnesota, which is relatively early on the scale, you know, October, what, 12th or so this year. And it was tough. It was warm. It was dry.
Yeah.
And got a few birds in 3 days, but it was like, I didn't even find that many. But the season just got progressively better. And I think as it cooled down and as birds colored up and
crops got harvested.
That was funny too. We were like, oh, you know, even in our forecast this year, our pheasant forecast, almost every state we're talking about, get ready for a lot of crops in the field early on. And man, when it really dried out fast and the crops came in, I think much more faster than we thought. And that cooler weather and that made a difference too. But I hunted in Minnesota a lot, probably my favorite place to hunt as we've talked, you know, my home state now, and Iowa, South Dakota, and North Dakota. That was sort of my Midwestern conglomeration this year, but it was a good season, and we want to hear from Ryan too. I know on pheasants and quail, especially, but you know, the season got better as I went along, and the hunting was good. It was funny, the hunting and buddy and I did the sort of the math that in South Dakota there's probably about 100 days of pheasant hunting now, right? You know, by the time you add up November, December, and January, and a little bit of October. And I took three runs to South Dakota, and on two of them we hunted in what I would consider some of the harshest conditions I've ever hunted in. It was unbelievably hard.
Wind and cold.
Yeah. And one day out with Eric Johansson, one of our PF poster children for production, agriculture, and ranching combined with raising pheasants, we hunted in a one day that went from 25 degrees to 6 degrees, started with 30-mile-an-hour sustained winds and went up to 40 and gusts from there, and it was tough, and you couldn't keep your hands warm. And then went back in January and had similar experiences. So I figure I hunted the five worst days of the 100. Other than the first run I made to South Dakota in early November, it was brutal conditions. But it always switched around, and when the wind went down, even if it was below zero, it felt like spring. Five below zero and no winds feels like spring after hunting in gale force winds. I thought it was a great season. I was also excited. We don't have a lot of snow this year,
right?
And still don't. And it's coming and going with some warm spells, and hunted right up through, Martin Luther King type weekend later in January, which sometimes you're just shut out. And that was fun to be able to hunt that late. But also Iowa had some nice hunting in Iowa. I think Iowa has the biggest birds. They're so big down there. I don't know. Do you notice that, Ryan, when you get down into Iowa? I think
it's like the master anglers.
I think their pheasants are
like body size.
Yeah, yeah, they're massive.
Corn fed.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I just think Iowa birds are huge. I love hunting. Huh. They make a big old thump when you're in Iowa.
You think they're bigger?
Yes, huh? I do. I don't know what it is.
Corn fed,
maybe.
Pheasants.
I don't know. But yeah, I had a fun pheasant season. Really good. Good dog work. Lark is at her peak. She's six. She's in her seventh season. And don't tell her. I'm starting to think, okay, when do I get the backup dog? But I think it'll be a year or two. I don't want to take away from her. But she still can run pretty much all day. And, she still has retrieving scratch from her contract. But she made some nice finds this year and nice catches on the occasional runner you get. And so it was a fun season. But I guess my last point is I had a sort of a tough time. We all have with some running birds this year. And I've sort of, we can get together, maybe another podcast, sort of a plan I've put together to, you know, get, we can always get better as hunters, and I want to get better at not having as many runner birds and not, you know, we all lose a few birds. I lost a few more than I like this year.
Wounded birds.
Yeah,
wounded. I was like, when do pheasants not run?
No, yeah, no, I'm talking about a wounded bird.
Broken wings.
Yeah,
running.
Yeah, a runner.
You need a short hair.
Yeah, I probably need a lab is
you
what
gotta,
I need.
You're going to toss them. I'm going to swing.
I need a
lab would do
a lab or a cocker.
Well.
But that's enough for me from pheasant season.
So that you, I brought up quail in Iowa, which I know you love doing,
yeah.
And you hunted Iowa a lot, but you didn't. You must have been hunting the northern tier of this state.
I didn't get down for quail this year, and largely that's was a function of the lack of snow north, and I could hunt pheasants all the way through.
Down there.
Yeah, I mean a lot of years I'll head down to southern tier of Iowa, which can be hit or miss. It's not the greatest quail hunting in the world, but there's quail there, and I didn't make it down this year just because the pheasant hunting. I actually ended up heading west or north, even north, to get those late pheasants.
Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. Grab the baton, Mr. Sparks.
I had a great season. Hunted six states. Some of them new to me. About half of them, I think, were new to me. So that's half the fun is just exploring and seeing some new country. I started my bird season up in northern Minnesota for rough grouse and woodcock. You know, not a big sample size, but the few trips I made, the 6 years I've lived here in Minnesota, it's the worst season I've had. And I don't know if it was pretty green or I was going back to areas that had been consistent for me before. My dog's getting older, but she's still a good dog. I don't know. I just didn't turn up a lot of birds, both woodcock or rough grouse. Yeah. Now, I know a lot of people who live up there and they're a lot better grouse and woodcock hunters than me, and they've definitely got into birds.
One note there, I didn't hunt woodcock and grouse as much as usual, but I didn't shoot a woodcock this year.
Neither did I.
It was, but I did. Then I heard that later in this they came through really late, and that might have been part of it too.
As you guys know, I absolutely love timberdoodle, and I do hunt them every year. I did shoot timberdoodle this year, but it was one of the poorest overall woodcock years that I've
good
had.
To hear it wasn't just
no
me
it wasn't
out.
Just you. I was hunting exceptional woodcock habitat in, you know, through late September into October, and they just weren't here.
Do you think it was a function of late migration and dry conditions?
I think those are the absolute two things.
Yeah.
Super dry in the woods. So places that alder sloughs or whatnot on the edges where they would normally be, it just was not dry. I'm sorry, it was not wet enough for them to, you know, be the worm burglars that they are and find food. Mm-hmm. So they were
worm burglars.
You never heard that?
No, that's
mud bats.
One. I like that one. I've heard that one.
Worm
I like
burglars.
Worm burglars are good.
Yeah, I mean that's what they eat. You know, they're eating earthworms and slugs and stuff, and it wasn't wet enough for them to find them in a lot of the historical places. So I think they were very concentrated into small areas, and the migration, because it was so warm, you know, that's the thing, as you talked about sharp tail season and early season, it was so gosh darn warm in September. Many times, you know, you had to be done hunting by 10, whether you're talking sharpies or the North Woods. So I think that affected the woodcock migration.
More from Ryan.
No,
we sidetracked.
No, that tracks with my experience. A lot of morning into maybe at the best early afternoon hunting, and then twiddling my thumbs in camp and hanging out with the dog, which was fun too. But then when other seasons started to open, Minnesota opener was good for me. It's kind of like we expected. I got into birds and it was good, but there were a lot of young birds. I shot a fair amount of birds that opening weekend, and I don't think I shot a single mature rooster. And there was one I shot when it got up, and the person next to me is yelling, hen, hen, hen. And it was just one of those situations where the light was just right, where it came right in front of me. I just had a perfect view and shot it, and he kind of looked at me like, Hinslayer. Like, no, man, it's a, I went and picked it up. And, you know, it's a real juvenile rooster, yeah. Yeah, so Minnesota consistently throughout the year for me was really good. South Dakota was fantastic. I made two trips out there, both for grouse and pheasants. Both the bird numbers were great. I know South Dakota is not known for huns very well, but I would say, you know, probably the most huns that I've seen in South Dakota. Not, now that's not saying I got into a ton, but it was, you know, we were finding a covey or two every time we went
that's
out,
great.
Which is pretty good. Mm. You know, I love huns. They're like big quail. Mm-hmm. So, Nebraska was about like last year, except I'd say the covey sizes were a little smaller. And
for,
then
for quail,
for quail. Yep. And then, Kansas and Missouri were two states new to me. So I don't really have any past experience to go off of, but from the people that I hunted with and talked to, they said the same, kind of same as Nebraska, kind of, you know, the same as last year, which they said the same thing. They're like, last year was a pretty good year, so we'll take it. And then, also got down to Arizona for the first time, and, you know, the people I was with had a lot more experience doing that than me, and they were like, man, it's too bad you couldn't come down here when the bird numbers were better. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, this is pretty good. Like, so I would come down here just for this. Like,
you didn't hunt Montezuma/Mearns, right?
No.
You hunted Gambles and Scalies, which was your first mm-hmm. hunt for both of those, right?
It was. All those birds would be new to me. Yep. So we would go out and we'd find about four coveys, you know, every morning, and then it would get warm. We'd hunt until about lunch. And yeah, shot my first scaled quail, shot my first Gambles quail, first experience with those.
Do those scalies run like
I've never first experience seeing a covey of almost 100 scalies running in front of me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were in hot pursuit. I felt like a kid. Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. That was with Clyde in Maryland.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, oh, there's some quail. They're running up here. And then Clyde was like, there's like 100 birds. And then they came up over this little dip and you could see them all going up the rise on the other side of the creek.
Running.
Yeah. And it looks like, I mean, you know, it's almost cliche. People say it looks like the ground is like crawling or wriggling. And that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah.
It's entertaining. I love scalies.
Yeah, cool.
And they definitely earn that, you know, characterization that they're track stars. But I have hunted them also in a particular type of habitat where there's a little bit more, and I don't know the biological name of the grass, but this yellowish desert grass. And when that's intermixed, they'll hold up. They get to, you know, they'll run across the, you know, the desert ground, and then they'll get to that grass and they'll hide out there, and you can get very nice points. And then when, you know, maybe not 100, but like 30 scalies get up by once, you're like, ah, it's so much fun.
They held well for us once we got the covey broken up. Mm-hmm. But then it wasn't like a 30, it was onesie twosies here and there, which was fun. Mm. And, the Gambles quail, how well they hold once you break the covey kind of amazed me. There was three different times I could see the birds on the ground before we flushed them.
Wow.
They were on the tip of the dog's nose. So that was, I could talk ad nauseum about every single one of those trips, but that was kind of my,
well, you can bring them up again because
yeah.
we're going to go through kind of a little bit of rapid questions, that will,
okay.
recap last year for each of you. All right, Carp, your top hunting destination of 2024.
Top hunting destination of 2024. I would have to say I had a lot of fun. This was a hunt I did for the journal. It's going to be in the summer issue. I went to South Dakota, Central South Dakota. Our chapter in Chamberlain, South Dakota, they're sort of the gold standard for operating a mentor hunt. Mm. And I went out and did a mentor hunt with them in late September. And I got to reconnect with some of the great folks in that chapter. They're young, high energy folks. They run a great mentor hunt. Met all kinds of fun folks, different from different walks of life, and just had a grand old time hunting pheasants out there in their mentored hunt and out there. And then I hung on a couple days and hunted prairie chickens.
Mm.
out in the grasslands up by Pier, and just had a grand old time up there hunting chickens. As you know, I love chickens.
I love chickens too.
It's chickens or sharp tails, you know. They're.
Do you have a preference between the two?
Whichever one I'm hunting at the time. But I just, that was my high. I think that was a highlight of the year, to actually combine that hunt and meet all those great new folks, and got great pictures. We had Jordan Darley on our staff on taking pictures. And, but then detoxing by myself with just me and tens of thousands of acres.
Detoxing. Was there a lot of drinking in Chamberlain?
No, my drinking days are over. I get my,
just being on a solo hunter as opposed to a group hunt.
Yeah. And there were chickens out there, and, God, I love that. That was fun. That was probably the highlight destination as far as for the entire year. And I, like Ryan said, Minnesota just was steady all year, right up through the late. You know, it's classic Minnesota hunting. You're going to get 2-3 chances a day, but there were birds around, and I enjoyed that too. So that's just a couple of highlights.
Sparks. Number one favorite destination of the year.
I got to go back to South Dakota again. I made 2 trips out there. My cousin farms and ranches out there. And before I went out there on the first trip, he's lived out there his whole life. And he said, I think this is probably the most pheasants we've ever had in my lifetime. And he wasn't wrong. I mean, there was a lot of pheasants, and there was a lot of, like I said, a lot of grouse and a lot of huns. So made 2 trips out there. Nice. I'd also never gone late, and you know, every year we go out there every year, and he always says, you got to come out when the crops are out, and you know, there's a little snow on the ground,
a little cold.
Yeah. And so it was my first time doing that, and holy smokes.
Yeah. Winter hunting was good this year. And I love it.
Yeah. And it was cold. I mean, we got true winter hunting, snow, cold. I mean, you had to take care of your dogs, and, but we, I'll talk more about it later, but it was a couple great trips.
Talk about cold. I'm going to put a request out to readers. I've always had trouble. I've destroyed my hands over the years keeping my hands warm. Send me some tips for how you keep your hands warm.
Okay.
So I can shoot.
T. Carpenter at pheasantsforever.org.
Yep.
You know, Clyde put me onto a pair of gloves in Arizona. It was colder. I was thinking Arizona is going to be, and I was shooting photos. And I needed a pair of gloves where I could work my camera and still keep my hands. I'll show you two out there. Okay. They're like quilted on the inside, like the grid pattern with the fleece, and they fit that underneath a leather glove. They're warm, and you can work a phone, or I was using my camera screen. It's touchscreen, so
I was a real conservationist in some of the hunts, because my right hand was in my pocket on my hand warmer, and out would go off rooster, and I'd like, oh, bye bye.
Do you remember the brand name of the glove that?
So they're not a traditional hunting brand. He was like, you got to go down to it was from a climbing store that was down there. He's like, that's where I got them. Outdoor Research, I think, was the brand.
Oh, okay.
Outdoor Research, yeah. Oh, wow. I've actually had them in the office today. I'll show them to you. Okay. They're nice. Yeah.
Carp, most memorable single moment of the season. Is there a dog moment, a bird, a shot? What stands out?
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask this. It was I shot my longest tail feather rooster I ever shot. And it was out in South Dakota.
That's saying something.
At my friend Eric Johansson's. And having good dog work. Dog was working along 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points. Heading toward another one, and out goes a bird. And it was actually the end of the day. I needed a bird. And three folks were sitting up on a hill in a truck. And they watched, and they saw the bird go down. And when I picked it up, it was like, oh my God. And they had come. It was 27 5/8 tail feather. And so that was
spoken like a true turkey hunter. Yeah. 5/8.
Yeah. Actually, 3.
Measuring spurs and measuring tail feathers.
They shoot some big deer out there, and they actually Boone and Crocketed it. They took the tail feathers were about a quarter inch different, so they gave me the middle measurement between the two tail feathers. And it was unbelievable. that just to get that magnificent bird, you know, it's not a first year bird. And it also was a runner. It took off across some wheat stubble, and Lark ran it down. And I just saw, you know, her catching up to the pheasant and tackling it, and it got away, and she tackled it again, and I was there. So cool. That was definitely a highlight of the year. Not only my friend saw it, I more or less made the shot. My dog did some saved me, and it had the longest tail feathers I'd ever gotten. So that was definitely a highlight of the year.
So is that bird going to be taxidermized, or are you saving the feather?
Doesn't sound like taxidermy material after being tackled twice.
Lark pulled a little few rump feathers off in the chase, but the tail feathers were intact, and I saved the spurs. So I'm going to do something special with it, but it. Could have, should have been mount material, and I've never mounted a bird from her yet, but that wasn't the one because of the chase down.
So there's a challenge for listeners as well. Send Carp photos of any tail feathers longer than 27 5/8. Because I think at one time we had on Facebook a 28-inch tail feather, but I've never, I can't recall anything larger than that. So if listeners have anything that exceeds that level, I'd like to see it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
T Carpenter at pheasantsforever.org.
Yeah. Yep. I'm always looking for the cool, unique things that people do with their tail feathers and stuff. I've got a lot of them, so there's lots of, I like to see what people use them for and how they display them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool ways that I'm like, oh yeah, I could do that.
Christmas crafts.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Your favorite moment of the season?
That's an easy one. When my grandfather got back from World War II, he bought himself a Remington Model 11 sportsman's model, and my grandfather was not someone that would spend frivolous money on anything. It was the first semi-automatic shotgun ever made in the United States, and he got the sportsman's model, which had a mallard on one side and a rooster pheasant engraved on the other side. It's pretty cool. It's the humpback design. It's kind of the same Belgian Browning design. The whole barrel recoils when the gun fires.
Really?
And we thought we had lost the gun. My grandpa passed away, and then my dad found it in the corner of our barn with a wool blanket thrown over the top of it.
Huh.
And it was not functional, and I took it into the gunsmith here in Minnesota, and they fixed it for me. They had to special order a part, and I gave it to my dad for Christmas. And then we went to South Dakota, and my dad shot a pheasant with it, and then he handed it to me, and a sharp tail got up, and I shot a sharp tail with it.
Wow.
So 3 generations of Sparkses have shot that gun.
That's cool.
It was super cool.
Very nice.
Yep.
Yeah, I can tell how meaningful that
is.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah. All right, we touched on this already, but we'll go top piece of new gear you used in the season that was, Carp.
Oh, man. People who know me know I'm not a real gear freak. I talked about the need for better gloves and a hand solution. I don't know that I really tried any new gear this year. I do, in all that late season hunting, like the first bad day, I just wore my standard light upland pants with good long underwear underneath and then chaps over the top, and it was fine, but it's sort of like you start trudging. And I did get a pair of just sort of decent hiking / snow pants, and they're lined. You don't have to wear long underwear, and they're plenty rough and tumble for pheasant hunting, and I really enjoyed wearing those on those cold ass days, because they just you only had one layer on. They were comfortable. They cut the wind. I really enjoyed wearing those. I'd call them mountain climbing pants, and they're thick but not too thick. I think that was a gear treat for me to and sort of migrate away from the standard chaps and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I can't keep pants up anyway, and they stayed up a little. When you don't have underwear and pants and chaps, you know, they all sort of, you sort of start waddling like Elmer Fudd, and I wasn't Elmer Fudding in these, so that was good.
Sparks, you brought up some gloves, but anything else that stands out to you?
I got two things. I'd always looked at these Garmin watches and thought, oh, those are cool. You know, you can track your dog on them, but I don't really need it. And then they were on sale and I bought one. And yeah, I'm right. You don't need one, but man, is it cool to just, cause you're already holding your gun right there and you just kind of tilt your wrist and you look at it and you're not constantly grabbing the handheld and looking at it, especially when you got, you know, I run pointers, so they're out there a little bit further, just checking in where they're at and all that. So I've really enjoyed the watch. And the other thing is I've tried almost every Upland vest that's made over the years, and I always say, oh, you know, I like the shell holder on this, but the frame on this one fits me better. Oh, and I like – well, I finally just tore every vest that I have apart and made a Frankenstein vest.
Did you really?
Yeah, so I've got pieces of – everybody that saw it is like, what vest is that? And I'm like, I don't even know what to tell you because it's got, it's.
Did you sew it or?
Well, I prefer the, I don't know what you call them, a strap style vest anymore. I have run like the traditional, just like a vest before. Yeah. But a lot of those these days they're modular. So they have Molly on them or Velcro or, so I didn't have to sew anything.
Huh.
It was just kind of plug and play and got everything how I wanted it. And I'm going to make a few more tweaks next year, but I've got it pretty close to where I'm like, this is probably the vest that I'm going to go to my grave with, you know. I'll have to replace parts as they wear out, but, you know.
The Frankenstein model.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've got one other gear-related note. You want to hear a little story?
Sure.
Carp Lust is gone.
Oh, man.
So I was with my son, Noah. And, you know, it's not like we got plenty of birds that just dropped, but it was another runner. We all happened to get those, and Lark tracked it. We ended up about 200 yards from where it went down, and she pointed 1, 2, 3 times, and then she just locked. And I went up, and I said, get it. And she wouldn't go. She just locked. And I looked, and I could see the pheasant hiding under a clump of grass. This is a nice blue stem. And I thought, I told Noah, I said, I'm going to catch it. And I wasn't thinking too much. I didn't put down my hat or anything. Mm. But
set the gun down.
I set my gun down, and I went in, and I could see the bird there. And I dived in, and I had it, and it got away. And Lark took off, and we all took off chasing it. We caught it about, I don't know, 40, 50 yards later. Maybe it was 15, maybe it was 70. And we finally got the bird. We're like, yes, we got it. Where's my gun?
Oh, no.
And I knew we'd find it. It was about 11 in the morning. I said, I got 5 hours. And it took just long enough that I was getting like, oh, shit. Can I say that?
Yeah, you just did. Did you have GPS cookie crumbs to follow?
No, I didn't have my tracker on.
That's right. I didn't have my tracker on.
And I found it. But it was like, man, what a release. Like, oh, my God, I found my gun. Mm-hmm. And that was a gear-related snafu. So I made a plan, and I'm going to start carrying it. You know, drop your hat. That's one thing. But it was cold and windy. I didn't want to drop my hat. I'm going to carry, like, some orange hanky or a little piece of tape I can go back and get and mark that spot better. I mean, that's tradition to do that, but I'm going to get something I can just take out and throw down, because then I wouldn't have had so much angst looking for my gun. So,
or you could let Lark actually retrieve the bird.
Yeah. I make no bones about it. I've said it 100 times. She scratched retrieving from her contract. We do the best we can.
It was opportunistic.
Yes, I know. These guys always give me crap. That's okay.
All right. Biggest miss of the season. And I you know, sometimes the bird that you didn't bring back to the dinner table is the one that sticks with you the longest. You know, you can remember, you know, what the sky was like, the smell in the air, you know, it's it.
What your friend said that got under your skin. Right. And
it's not, you know, hunting is not killing. Hunting is hunting. And sometimes there's misses. And so some of those misses actually, you know, you end up really enjoying the story that goes with them. So is there a miss carp that stands out to you?
Where do I start? let Ryan go first, and I'll try and think as he goes for the most spectacular of my misses.
Sure.
Epic miss.
Well, I'm going to interpret miss a little more broadly. Mm. I talked with a few people that went to Texas and hunted quail this year, and I missed not that going to Texas.
You what?
Missed, I think, a very good year for quail in Texas.
You just missed the opportunity. Yeah,
yeah, I missed opportunity. And we were talking about going into the season with the quail reports and stuff. Everybody was saying, Texas is going to be good. Go to Texas. And it was one of my top states I wanted to get to this year and then just never made it down there. And was just talking to a friend that's still down there right now. And he's like, it's really good. So maybe next year.
That might be the answer to my next question. But we'll get there in a moment. You have a miss?
I thought of one. You know, and there, believe me, there's no shortage of birds that I just whiffed on. But one that stands out that I didn't even shoot at was one of those late season days in South Dakota. Just the most wind I've ever hunted in. It was sort of almost dumb to be out there hunting. It was so hard. But the dogs were finding some birds, and they were wild. We thought, oh, they'll be holding maybe in some cattails, and they weren't. And we got back with my – there were three or four of us, and we got back from a swing. And as I walked up to the vehicle, you know, two of my buds said – they're just laughing. They said, you didn't even see that bird. They said, you were walking along and they had shot, they were a little ahead of me and they had shot at a bird. And they said, yeah, and some birds got up behind us. And they said, you were standing there watching us and a bird flew 10 yards behind you, right past. And it, just in the wind, I didn't see it. I didn't. Mm. And they're just laughing. So they said, we thought it was going to run into you. Mm. And I never even saw it or heard it or anything. And that was a spectacular miss of not even getting the shot off. Mm. So that was pretty funny.
All right. Final question of the season recap, and that's looking forward to next season. What's tops on your list? We'll start with Sparks this time. Your top destination, top thing you want to do.
Yeah.
What's 2025 going to include?
Well, going to Arizona was an eye-opener. The first spot we hunted, I got an Onyx and I clicked it, and it said the spot was 500,000 acres.
Of public land.
Of public land. Mm. And I thought, I could get used to this. I mean, you could walk. It just went on to the mountains, up and over the mountains and down on the other side. And I thought, this, I could spend a lot of time down here. Mm. So I've kind of got this romantic vision of getting a wall tent and, you know, a Starlink and going down there the month of January and becoming better acquainted with quail country in Arizona. Mm. So I need to improve my dog situation, though. I've got a little bitty hamster-sized puppy on the ground in Texas that I need to pick up.
A pup has been born.
Oh, yeah, a litter of 12. Okay. I got a few pictures of them again last night.
How recently was it born?
They're probably 6 or 7 weeks right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it won't be too long before you.
I'm meeting him in Oklahoma after Pheasant Fest. So
okay.
The Monday after Pheasant Fest.
Male or female? I haven't
decided.
So you don't have a name then either.
I'm letting Jillian pick the name on this one. I named our last couple dogs. Yeah. Okay. And then I've got a 10-year-old. So going down and spending
Tip it.
Maybe I'll haul my dad's. My dad's got three dogs that are all pretty much in their prime. So if I show up with three prime dogs and an old dog and a puppy, that'd be a fun time running around in Arizona. Nice. So, yeah.
All right, Carp. Where are you going next season?
I think I got two things I should be able to perhaps next year draw another Minnesota prairie chicken tag. That's a limited hunt up in northwestern Minnesota. It's always a highlight. I just love doing that. The other thing is just I didn't hunt quail this year. I got to get down somewhere and hunt some quail next year.
Come to Nebraska.
And thank you for that invite. I think maybe Ryan can help me or we'll meet up somewhere. And I got to get on some quail. Bob White's most likely, but, you know, I've only shot Bob White quail, and I would like to I have a deep interest in some of the other quail as well. And those would be two things amongst the usual pheasant fare that's on my list.
And Sharpies and chickens.
And woodcock. I didn't shoot a woodcock this year, and I love hunting woodcock, and it just wasn't going to happen because I was on the pheasant trail pretty hard, and usually those woodcock will come, you can get them like by mid-October, but then once October gets going, I'm on the pheasant trail almost full time, and it's hard to get after woodcock for me.
You know what I just realized? I said I didn't shoot a woodcock this year. I lied. I did not shoot a woodcock in Minnesota, but I'm working on a story for the super issue. When I was hunting with the Gateway chapter in Missouri,
three species.
Shot of rooster pheasant, a bobwhite quail, and a woodcock on the same walk.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think Missouri might be on my quail list. QF's doing some great stuff in Missouri, and I would like to get down there at least. And that's not a horrible
drive for
here. But between Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas, get after some quail. That's definitely on my list next year.
All right. So I'm going to transition us to previewing the spring editions of the journals.
Yep.
Before we get there, shout out to Onyx. I'm sure you were looking at Onyx, Ryan, when you saw the 500,000 acres of public access.
It wasn't. Carp could have found his gun easier if he'd had the Onyx tracker.
I used the tracker. I knew that spot. I didn't have it on that day.
Onyx is a proud partner and national sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And On the Wink podcast, you can click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you to an Onyx webpage where you can enter the code PFQF and get 20% off your annual membership to Onyx. And Onyx will make a contribution back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. And while we always talk about Onyx connected to upland bird hunting, we're heading towards spring turkey hunting. Ooh. And you can sure use Onyx as you you guys are so anxious to talk spring turkey.
Don't get us started on the turkeys.
You're both turkey junkies. But you can get Onyx and use it for turkey hunting and support our wildlife habitat mission at the same time. So check it out. The link is in the show notes. All right. We'll start with Carp because yesterday we reviewed, we had the editorial review of the spring edition of the Pheasants Forever Journal. We'll start with you. For folks that are current members and it's headed their way, and for folks that maybe are interested but not yet members, give a overview of the issue to come.
Well, it's a sort of, I'd call it a special issue. We most issues of both magazines, we try and give them a theme, at least for a certain set of the features, sort of a context of the content. And this one, I'm not going to say got away from me, but I have a deep passion for pollinators, bees, butterflies, all the other creatures of good pheasant and quail habitat that benefit from that good habitat. And the theme of the issue, I think, is simple, and it makes the case for great habitat for pollinators is also great habitat for pheasants and quail. So, and what this issue does is make that tie, the science behind this diverse native habitat consisting of native prairie grasses and native forbs or wildflowers, that is the best nesting and especially brood rearing habitat for pheasants, but it also offers home sustenance and habitat to the pollinators, bees and butterflies. And whether those pollinators and the benefits to them are a byproduct of creating great pheasant habitat. And this issue celebrates the blooms, the wildflowers, the habitat that creates great pheasants also serves as great habitat for pollinators, especially monarch butterflies and bumblebees and all those creatures that pollinate and benefit from this habitat, but it also raises pheasants. It's all one and the same. It's habitat and conservation and other wildlife that most of our members are interested. We're all interested in pheasants and growing pheasants and quail, but this habitat also other harbors other creatures of the uplands. And this issue takes, I'll call it, a deep dive into this. And one of the neat things I think readers will find about this is it's filled with about, well, I'm going to give you the exact count, 18 of the pages are devoted to three different categories of photo gallery. One are these beautiful blooms that get out in summer and experience pheasant and quail habitat in summer. See these blooms, see the life that's out there. Another photo gallery celebrates these pollinators, the beauty of these butterflies and bees, and the beauty that the color and the beauty and the grace and elegance that they add to the pheasants running around underneath. And then finally, there's the other creatures of the uplands, the songbirds, from bobolinks and dick thistles to white-tailed deer. You know, many of our members, especially, I always think about our folks in Illinois who they're big whitetails. They grow great pheasant habitat that, oh, big surprise, has pheasants, but it also grows big whitetails. Mm-hmm. And you see the same in South Dakota, in this great prairie habitat. And so there's another photo gallery of all these great creatures that benefit from this pollinator habitat that also grows pheasants. So that's the gist of this issue. Spring seems like the perfect time to do it. Mm. And I hope it gets folks excited. And like I said, one of the biggest things is that pheasant habitat exists beyond just fall and winter when you hunt it. And I hope people recognize all the other benefits it has to other wildlife.
And I think it's a good issue for if you're a hardcore bird hunter, but you got relatives, family, friends that just don't quite get it. You know, don't understand, and they expect, like, Pheasants Forever is all about, oh, it's just a bunch of rednecks shooting birds and running behind dogs and drinking beer. You know, this is a great issue to give those, you know, opposing point of views publications, like, no, it's a lot bigger. Like, here's a look at all the things that the organization cares about. And it, you know, so if you have people that are doubters, it'd be a great opportunity and give them a gift membership or at least this publication and say, have a look at what these folks care about to make great bird habitat, great access, and memorable moments in the field.
Yeah, that's a great point. Is we all, you know, people say, you know, well, us as employees, but there's also so many of our members are so dedicated. Their Pheasants Forever runs through their blood like it does ours. And it's another great way, like you said, to tie people who aren't hunters into the habitat mission, is look at all the other things that benefit in addition to these pheasants and quail, which we so love.
And the spring issue for both publications, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever Journal, also includes the annual report.
Yes.
And it's a great way to reflect how dollars that are contributed, whether through membership, through corporate donations, through planned giving, result in habitat and access on the ground.
Yeah.
And including through top chapter lists that are part of this edition too.
And are key to putting in all this habitat that benefits pheasants and all those other creatures, pollinators among them.
So if folks want to get this issue, maybe when they want to get an extra issue to give to the local school teacher or give to a family member, or maybe they're not a member yet and they want to get signed up, give them your contact info.
tcarpenter@pheasantsforever.org. And let me know what you think of the magazine, too, when you get it. It takes a little different track. That's by design. It's one of the, I'd have to say, it's the magazine that I've done. It's the magazine I'm most proud of thus far in my tenure.
Is that right?
As editor. Yep, I think it is. I think it is. Because it ties so much more into the mission to create these spectacular upland game birds, pheasants, quail. But it also ties in one of the aspects of all the other factors that benefit pollinators. And then like we always talk about, soil quality, water quality, carbon sequestration. That's the biggest word I've ever used, I think. So I'm excited. Let me know what you think about it. I think
we reviewed it the other day, and it's a beautiful issue. Yeah. I mean, people are going to want to, I mean, it's just flip through it, and it did a hell of a job. So
thank you.
And if your membership's current and you're listening to this, it's headed to the printer as you're listening.
Well, so, yeah, we're going to
I think it mails the first week of March.
It'll mail right about at Pheasant Fest time. Yeah. So you'll be seeing it, if you're a member, mid-January. If you're not a member.
Mid-March.
Yes, mid-March. If you're listening to this podcast and you're not yet a member, drop me an email at tcarpenter@pheasantsforever.org and say, I just joined. I want to get that spring pollinator issue, and I'll get you a copy sent out.
All right. We'll turn our attention to the spring edition of the Quail Forever Journal. What do you got on tap, Sparks?
Yeah. So I don't know how many years ago it was. My dad and I burned our old cattle pasture, and you know, it took some other work as well, but The results of that is probably some of the most lush, beautiful pollinator habitat, the wildflowers and stuff, and the response we saw from the birds that are coming fall. It really lit a passion for prescribed fire in me to see what it actually does. Because there's nothing uglier than a burn right after it happens. Mm. But then a couple months later.
Oh, it's not even a couple months.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when it's in its full form, it's just, it's amazing what it does. It just transforms the landscape. And so that really is, that's our theme for spring, is the fire issue. We have everything from, Jenny Nguyen Wheatley did a great historical piece on Native Americans' use of fire and how that really impacted the American landscape even before the arrival of Europeans. You know, we have a biography of Herbert Stoddard, who, if anybody's just not familiar, he's kind of the modern father of fire. And just his personal story is amazing. You know, you talk about somebody that dropped out of school in the eighth grade because they needed to work and make money and put food on the table for their family, who went on to transform the face of modern conservation as we know it.
Mm. Yeah, he's kind of the Aldo Leopold of quail.
Yeah. And they were, he was good friends with Leopold well. Yeah. Lifelong friends. So it goes, and I've heard this from multiple people. He died with a copy of Sand County Almanac in his hands.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of other, our own Casey Sills doing a great story on how prescribed fire is kind of turning back the quote-unquote green glacier of woody encroachment and eastern red cedars in Nebraska. It's basically fire all the way through. So I'm excited to put it out. We got a great cover, and I think it'll be a good one. So two unique issues, pollinators and fire, but nothing goes hand in hand. Pollinators and fire make pheasants and quail. Mm. So
we said I gotta make a spring turkey tie here. Fire. Spring turkey tip. I have some friends in southwestern Wisconsin. When it's time for them to manage their CRP and they burn, I keep tabs on them. Mm-hmm. Those are the best places to hunt turkeys you can ever imagine. A burn, and the turkeys get, and it just, it takes everything down, and they just glom there for feeding. Do you agree, Ryan?
Yeah, absolutely. Fresh growth.
It's crazy. They got the greens, they got the bugs, they got the fresh growth. It's mint for every creature, but it's great for turkey hunting too.
This is the difference between the three of us. That you guys are, you know, the calendar has turned. Most of the upland hunting seasons are over, and you are both single-mindedly thinking about spring turkey. Yep. I haven't given it a single thought yet.
When I got in the car to come home from my last pheasant hunt in South Dakota, it's like, well, time to start thinking spring turkeys.
Oh, it hasn't even entered my conscience yet. Consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
My vest is already out and starting to get organized.
I fell asleep thinking about turkeys last night.
I fell asleep.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
I fell asleep on X-ing turkey spots.
See,
so there you go.
My mind is focused. I've got the puppy at home. My mind's thinking about 2025 upland season and getting young winter ready for, you know, that first, whatever it's going to be, September 1st, you know, sharptail, hun, maybe a blue grouse.
That'd be cool.
But about mid-May, you'll send me a picture from central Minnesota of a turkey you picked up somewhere up in central Minnesota,
yeah,
one of your spots. You will. I know you will.
But I only turkey hunt as an excuse to scout for pheasants and rough grouse.
That's true.
Or mushrooms.
Which is part of the fun of spring turkey hunting is back all the wildlife you see and quail. I mean, I would bet Ryan and I are going to hunt in Nebraska this year.
We will hear quail calling while there's turkeys gobbling as well.
I'm looking
forward
to that.
You're going to come in late May too, right?
Oh, no, probably early.
Early May. Right. It'll be going. Yeah.
So we won't get into all those details, but we're scheming right now. And,
I'm trying not to gobble right now.
And pheasants.
I've tried very hard for this not to become the spring turkey episode of On the Wing podcast.
You ready?
Yep. and I've failed miserably. Sparks, people want to get the spring edition of Quail Forever Journal. They can sign up online.
Yeah, they got till March 12th to sign
March
up
online. March 12th is the deadline to get in on the spring
edition. And if you hear this late and you still want to get a copy, just send me an email, rsparks@quailforever.org.
Outstanding.
Now, you can when you preview this podcast, you can say, "Here, carp, gobble like a turkey."
You want that to be the social media clip?
Yeah.
I can guarantee you it will not be the social media clip.
Come on. Have some guts to you. Put it out there.
Oh, that's fun. Thanks for doing this, fellas.
Fine.
I'll be mindful of the next time. Maybe we'll have a book club as the next episode with you guys, and we'll throw in one turkey book to just keep you engaged in the conversation.
That'll be hard to boil down to one turkey book.
And on that note, folks, I'm Bob St-Pierre. For Tom Carpenter, the national treasure. For Ryan Sparks, the regional gem.
Can I end it? Tell me when you're ready.
You go ahead and end this one.
Are we done?
Yeah.
That's a weak one.
Always follow the dog. Something good will run. And my dogs have pointed fingers.